Ready to stop trading time for money and build a business that can scale? Then you're in good company. This is the Productize Podcast, where I chat with entrepreneurs who've transformed their businesses using the Productize service model. I'm your host, Brian Castle. Want to learn my best strategies for productizing your business? Then get my free crash course by going to productizecourse.com. Now let's get into the show.
All right, here we go. Today on the Productize Podcast, you've got my conversation with Dan Norris, who really needs no introduction these days. But back in 2014, he launched WP Curve to paying customers, famously within 7 days. Fast forward to today, and he's grown this productized WordPress support service to over 7 figures a year in revenue. Wow. So this conversation was actually recorded back in late 2014, when Curve was in the thick of its early rise, and Dan and I got into the nitty-gritty of how the launch went and how they grew so fast. So it'll be interesting to kind of look back and hear his thoughts, you know, from a little ways back, you know, understanding what WP Curve has actually grown to be today. So pretty exciting stuff. Before we dive into the interview, I don't want to forget about today's quick tip when it comes to productized services. And today, that quick tip is leverage your unique advantage. And what I mean by this is, every business idea and every path and every decision that you're going to make has to be rooted in, you know, coming from you, your unique experience, your unique advantage. You know, maybe you've worked in a certain industry for a while and you know some key insight that most people aren't really aware of, or you're more familiar with a particular problem and even the type of solution that would solve that problem better than most. You know, you want to really start with yourself and even look to like networks of groups of people that you're connected to. You know, these are huge advantages when it comes to launching any kind of new business, but especially a productized service business, because that's when you're really going to get into the nitty-gritty of solving a specific problem for a specific type of customer. And the better that you know that customer, whether it's, you know, from your unique experience or someone you know, or, you know, where you're from, you really want to leverage that stuff. You know, yes, there are thousands and millions of great business ideas and markets that are quote unquote ripe for disruption. Okay, I can't even speak today. Disruption. As much as I hate that term, but you know, you shouldn't just go for anything just because you think that there's some kind of opportunity there. You want to start with your unique advantage. You're always going to find more success going that way. So today's interview with Dan Norris is a great example of someone who did exactly that. He launched WP Curve to be a WordPress support service because Dan himself had plenty of experience working with the WordPress platform for years, and he knew plenty of clients who needed exactly the type of support service that WP Curve offered. So you know, he used his own unique insights to launch that within 7 days and get those 10 first paying customers. So really insightful stuff. All right, now let's get on to the interview. All right, I'm here with Dan Norris. He's the co-founder of WP Curve. Dan, welcome.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me, mate.
Yeah, no problem. So you know, we've spoken a number of times now, and I think we talked like at various stages of WP Curve. I even spoke to you before WP Curve in your previous life working on Informly. For those who aren't familiar, what is WP Curve and what do you guys do?
Right, yeah. So WP Curve is pretty simple. We have a $69 a month plan, and we do unlimited WordPress fixes and small jobs. And we've gone from, as you said, before not existing 14 months ago, and now we're just signing up a lot of people. I think last week we signed up around 30 different customers. And we're up to 500 customers and 20 staff and about $36,000 a month in recurring revenue.
Wow, that's awesome, man. Very cool. So you guys do, and by the way, I kind of just want to frame this interview because it's a little bit different from most of the other case study interviews that are included here in the course. And what I really wanted to get you on here because what you've built here, as you just said, you know, a team of 20, you know, you're serving 500 customers. It's kind of the other side from productized consulting. You guys have truly built a productized service business. It's largely built on manual processes, as we'll get into here today. But
you know, it'll be interesting to hear how you've scaled that up so quickly. But you know, what I kind of want to know is I first want to understand the service itself. So you guys are providing kind of on-call customer support for WordPress site owners. What's actually included in that support, and what's not included?
Really, anything that gets done by a developer that can be done in under 30 minutes is included. And because it's not always completely black and white what 30 minutes is, we normally extend it a little bit. Like if someone sends us through, like, you know, can you put together this landing page and it'll take 45 minutes, we'd normally do something like that. But generally, it's pretty cut and dry. Like it'll be a bug, or it'll be they've installed a plugin, it just doesn't look quite right, or they're getting a PHP error up the top, or it's something more procedural like setting up analytics, or all of that kind of stuff that can be done as a small job, then that's what we do. What's not included really is anything that's not development. So SEO is included to a point, you know, where it's a developer that does it, like things like fixing up permalinks or page titles, installing Yoast, that kind of stuff. But actual SEO advice on how do I get more backlinks, that kind of stuff, we don't really do. Design, we don't really do. Although, as you know, most developers have some level of design. So if the client is specific about what they want, then normally the developer can do that as well. But we don't employ designers, so we can't do like from scratch design.
And I mean, do you get a lot of like website or people who want a website and don't even have one yet coming to WP Curve? Like, can you guys set me up a new website?
No, we're for existing site owners. So we do have a lot of people that come for that, and we have to tell them we can't help them. But Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, if it's really for existing site owners, and if you've got a new website, what you need is a project, more than likely, unless you're like super technical yourself and you can do 90% of it yourself, you probably need a local developer, and that's really outside of scope for what we do.
Gotcha. So even if they're like, you know, I just bought this theme and I've got hosting all set up, can you guys just install it and set it up? Like, is that still like kind of out of the scope?
Well, I mean, if it's inside 30 minutes, then it's in scope. But it usually becomes pretty clear pretty quickly whether the client can really use our service for what they want to do with it. Like, we have had clients who've had a new site, they've done a lot of it themselves, or they've got a really simple requirements and they want to install a new site. And if it can be done inside 30 minutes, then we do it. But what is more often the case is they are someone who needs a project and they really need an agency or a freelancer to build the site and design the site for them, and they're sort of wondering if they can use our service so it can be cheaper for them. And that tends to not work out too well, because most of the jobs for like a new site in that situation are more than 30 minutes.
Interesting. And then, you know, I'm also kind of wondering about the quantity of requests. So your customers are subscribed, you know, month after month. You said it's 69?
Yeah, you can. So we have a $69 plan or $99, and the $99 one, we do proactive support. So we'll go in and upgrade plugins and upgrade WordPress and check the site occasionally, monthly, do a backup every month, that kind of stuff. With the standard plan, we just do requests when they're ordered. So in terms of the frequency of requests, it's unlimited, but it's sort of naturally throttled by a few things. One is it's only per website, so you can't have more than one website unless you want to sign up more than once. And the other thing is you can only have one request at a time. So we normally turn around requests in about 7 hours, but we only guarantee same day turnaround. So like if we're really busy, then it might take us, you know, 15 hours or something, which would be unusual, but like that is possible to take, say, 15 hours to do a job, and then they'll request the next one. So it sort of makes it difficult for them to request. It would be unusual for a client to request sort of more than 15 or 20 jobs a month.
Gotcha.
And because it's per site, it would be really weird for one site to have that many little things that needed to be done each month as well. Like that hasn't really happened yet, except for when they're sort of haven't got their site live yet and they're trying to use the service to get it live.
Right.
But typically it would be, you know, like normally when people sign up, they'll sign up because they've got a couple of issues they've got in mind. And the first couple of months there'll be, you know, 5 or 10 jobs, but after that it'll be less than that.
Interesting. Cool. So and then I'm also kind of wondering, how does the billing work exactly? And is there a free trial, or is it they sign up and they begin billing right away?
Yeah, no free trial. It's $69 a month. There's no lock-in contracts. As soon as you sign up, we do a site review, which gives you a few ideas for things you can improve on the site, and then you can start requesting jobs once we've activated you in the system.
Gotcha. I think that's something that, you know, if you look at these like SaaS applications, and almost everyone out there does some kind of free trial, or at least that's like the go-to method, right? But I think in the productized service world, everything is done manually. You know, we're investing in actual man hours on every process, so free trials just don't really come into play, or most of the time they don't.
No free trials. We wouldn't do that. I mean, if people, I would do it for SaaS. I'd probably do a credit card free trial, because I've done the other way before, mm-hmm. the freemium, and it was a disaster. But for service, I wouldn't be doing any free trials. I mean, you want to know that, especially for a really low cost product like this, if they can't afford $70, like if they're, whatever doubts they have about the service, that you should be able to find creative ways to rectify those, whether it's by putting proof on the site or just, you know, having a lot of people promote the service. Like I got a email yesterday from a guy who's probably the most well-known internet marketer that I can think of. And he told me that he's put us up on his resource page, and he's told me that he's heard about WP Curve all over the place. And like that kind of brand recognition is how you get around not having to do stuff for free, because people know about us now, and they've heard about us from a bunch of different places.
Right.
And a bunch of influencers. Yeah. So they trust the service. They don't need to try it for free. And if they do, then I think maybe it's not a good fit, and maybe they're just not really that keen to pay $70 a month for something, which is fine, yeah. but maybe not a good fit for us.
That's awesome. So in a couple minutes, I want to get a little bit into how you guys do marketing and how you did it in the beginning. But first, I'd like to focus on the systems and how you've scaled this up and how you did that so quickly. So I actually remember when you first launched it, you got a lot of attention, and rightfully so, for launching this thing in what was it, like 7 days? You had something like 10 paying customers?
Yeah. Yep. So we went from idea to paying customers in 7 days, and that's a book I'm writing as well on that topic called The 7 Day Startup. So I talk about that in the book. But I think because I'd done a bunch of stuff before WP Curve and made it fairly public on my blog, and I built up a list and an audience, then there was a bit of kind of awareness around what I was doing next, which was cool.
Yeah. So I mean, when the idea came about and you threw up the landing page and launched this service, you know, you're coming from previously doing a software product informally, and this is a completely manual service-based business. I mean, what made you decide to make that kind of change? Like after informally, how come it wasn't another software idea?
I didn't have time. I had no money left. I had 2 weeks before I had to get a job and move, and I was literally looking for jobs, and so it just came purely out of desperation.
Well, there you go.
I wanted to have a software business, and I really wanted to have a startup, like a high growth, scalable type business, and I wanted it to be SaaS because it's just everything about that appeals to me. And I just did not want to do a services business. But when I really thought about it, I think what I really didn't want was all the things that I didn't like about my last agency, and things like, probably the most important being, it was impossible to scale, at least for me. Secondly, it was extremely inconsistent in terms of revenues and profits. And thirdly, dealing with annoying things like really gray area briefs and, you know, outstanding debts.
Yep.
Cashing checks, man. I will never cash a check ever again in my entire life. I don't care. I'll go get a job before I start a business that has me cashing checks.
Yeah, exactly.
So I sort of thought about those things, and I knew I didn't want any of those things. But then I thought, well, I can probably still do some sort of service without those things, as long as I'm really, really tight around what I offer.
Yeah.
And so I came up with something that was just subscription, and so you have the benefits of SaaS, but service means that there's a bunch of people who have that problem straight away and are probably going to sign up. So it's not a very long cycle like it is with SaaS. So I knew I could probably get people to sign up, and I needed to do that quickly. So it was a really good fit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember the stories, you know, in that first week, you're going to bed with your cell phone by the pillow, you know, actually doing the customer support, the live chat customer support 24/7, just by yourself. So you must have obviously from the very start assumed that like if this thing takes off, you are going to immediately start hiring a team and scaling this up and building systems, right? It wasn't the kind of thing where, oh, maybe I can just handle a handful of clients for the foreseeable future.
No way. I mean, I was not going to compromise. I wasn't going to start another business that I couldn't scale. So right. I would have got a job before I did that. And so this was all the whole time from the start. It was still going to be the startup that I wanted, and it was going to be a scalable business. But the only difference was that I was just going to have to hustle a bit extra early on.
Mm-hmm.
I knew eventually I would definitely hire to replace me and to find a version of me on the other side of the world.
Yeah. I mean, I really like that. That whole concept of just, and you talk all about this in your book, the 7-day startup. I've been hearing your other interviews, on podcasts talking all about it, about how you can just launch an idea, based on manual processes and even start delivering the very service that you're selling, rather than spend months and tons of cash, investing into software. This is truly a way to build a scalable business. But with the caveat that you are putting in that extra work up front, doing everything yourself, figuring out those processes and then systemizing them and delegating and building out the automation that way.
But I think if you're an entrepreneur who hasn't had a decent success yet, which I was a year ago, you really do need to be prepared to do that. And if you're not, then you're probably in the wrong business.
Right. Yep. So, I mean, let's talk about today for a minute. It's like, what do the systems and processes that you've developed over the past year, as you've scaled up to 20 teammates and 500 customers, I mean, what does that look like? Like, how does an organization like that stay on track? You're dealing with all these support tickets and these requests coming in. So how do you guys like not lose track of everything?
Yeah. So we sort of had a bit of a rough plan of how we would get to 200 customers and what systems we would use, and then another one for how we would get to 1,000 customers, and then another one for post 1,000 customers. So 0 to 200 customers, it was a combination of Trello and email, and that was it. It was literally Gmail. And I had Trello that I used for a couple of the staff. I think so at 200 customers, we would have had about maybe 10 staff, so 8 developers and me and Alex. And at that point, it was sort of manageable to do things via email, but we knew eventually it wouldn't be manageable. So we had a plan to go from email and Trello through to a help desk system. And we rolled out Help Scout, which we use now. And that's going to suit us, I think, maybe up to maybe 1,000 customers, but that's going to be a stretch. I think we're going to probably before then find that it's difficult to manage that. Just because of the way our business works and the amount of jobs that come in, post 1,000, I think we'll probably have to build our own system to make sure like customers are. There's a whole bunch of intricacies around doing web dev work that aren't really catered for in support system. Things like knowing when to prioritize certain jobs and how to deal with email versus live chat, like when the customer really needs to chat live versus when the email is fine. That kind of stuff that is not done very well by help software or project software. So I think we'll probably have to build something in between.
That's interesting. Yeah. We've been using Help Scout for a while for Restaurant Engine and, love it. I mean, it's just such a fantastic tool for any kind of email based support. And yeah, I mean, I can see how like we're also using it for sales as well. And we kind of link up Trello, which we use as a CRM with Help Scout. It's just an easy way for, my salesperson and myself and our other teammates to kind of hop in and out of different tickets, really like that, and kind of like leaving each other notes on the tickets. That's really awesome. But yeah, I could see how we've had to assign tickets as urgent, but we had to like kind of like create a tag called urgent. And then even that gets a little bit lost in the system.
It's also like how many tickets a day would you do and how many staff do you have?
We have 2 full-time on support and then 1 on sales and then me. The support does get pretty heavy, especially because we do all the setups manually. So every new customer, we're going back and forth with every new customer probably like 10 times for their first 2 weeks of being a customer with us. And then over the year or so that, you know, or longer that their customers, they're, you know, periodically sending requests. So, yeah, it gets a little hectic, but it's, for us right now, it's definitely better than something like Gmail, which, like you, in the first, I'd say 6 to 8 months, I was also just using fully Gmail on customer support.
Yeah, no, Help Scout is great, but I think, like, we've got, so it's, I think, 18 different, well, 20 different people who are in there, and then probably, I'm just trying to think how many jobs a day, probably 150 different jobs a day come in. And that's the main thing, is like, how do you allocate all that work in a way that is best for the customer and also best for the staff? Like, I don't want to assign 30 jobs to a staff member and then they get sort of overwhelmed, you know, about what they have to do, all of that kind of stuff. So I think it'll work. It'll be awesome for us up until a point, but then eventually I think we're going to grow out of it. So we sort of have to plan for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do you handle this kind of stuff? Like, you must have some kind of procedures in place, right? And what were like the key procedures early on, and what can you give us some kind of a glimpse of what they, you know, or tell us like what they look like today?
Yeah. So, well, the hiring one is one that I've put up on our site, the recruitment process for hiring developers. And that's probably our biggest and most detailed process, because we got to the point where I couldn't do it all myself.
That was a really great post. I'm going to link it up alongside this video for you guys. I read that and man, that, you know, your whole process is just, you know, dialed in there. That was really good.
Yeah. So that one's, I mean, that's probably the most important, because at the rate we're growing, we have to hire every 1 or 2 weeks, a new like developer from overseas. And it's just too much for me to do. And there's a big process that we have around that where we give them trial tasks and score them and make them write development notes and all of that kind of stuff. So, that was a big one originally. Again, like with all the stuff we're doing, we sort of do what is the best thing to do at the time. And early on, it was just me doing the hiring. And eventually, it was too much for me. And we also have to hire on the other side of the world. So we made that into a process. And I mean, the high level version of that is when our response times get to a certain point, it triggers a hiring process. And we have an executive assistant in the US who's a US-based person, and then I've got one in the Philippines who helps me out, and so Ness or Julie will take over that process and reach out to developers and start running trials, and basically we don't see it until I review their trial at the end and confirm that they've got everything right, and then we just make a decision on whether to hire. So that's one. There's a whole, I mean, there's so much stuff, because we also use Infusionsoft, so there's a lot of customer related processes that are all written for like our admin staff, so they can do some of those things as opposed to me doing them. Just silly things like, you know, customers want to change the plan they're on, or you know, they signed up with a different email and their email address changed, or something like that. Like, all of those little things are covered in procedures for Infusionsoft. We have procedures for our dev team, and the main one there is, there's probably two things. That one is just canned responses, which are included in Help Scout, for certain types of questions. And the other is a document, which is like our solutions document, where if a customer asks a specific sort of question, then there's a document that tells the dev how to, like a procedure to follow in that situation. So like if the customer says, I want to install Google Webmaster Tools, or if they say, I would like to have a sitemap and submit it to Google, then we have a procedure around installing Yoast, setting up Webmaster Tools, submitting the sitemap, all of that kind of stuff is covered in that procedure.
Yeah, so you guys are not only creating procedures for how to handle, like, you know, like handle Help Scout and your internal things, but you also need procedures for actually what you guys do is website development stuff. So you need to know how to work a WordPress site and have all these procedures for that. So, I mean, you know, I know that you know, web development and WordPress pretty well, but did you write all these development procedures, or over time are you actually having your development team start to write those procedures as well?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I write most of them because I mean, I don't need to know how to code to know what needs to be done in certain situations. Like the coding side of the stuff is normally when there's an error on a site, and developers just intuitively know how to fix that because they just troubleshoot the code, and that's not a procedure. But it's more the, like the standard tasks, like the one I mentioned with Webmaster Tools, or setting up analytics, installing certain plugins or recommending certain plugins, or even just advice like recommending hosting. We have like a set of providers that we recommend and a standard email that people get sent to give them an idea of who that provider is and why they're a good choice, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I've written pretty much all of it. I think Alex has written a few processes. He's sort of more into like the, well, he handles the US team, so he's written processes for Julie, and also like he's sort of has a bigger focus on like team morale and things like that. So he has processes around like, you know, when do we kind of congratulate the team, and when, you know, when customers submit good reviews, like what we do with those, and how the admin guys grab that and put it into the team chat and that, all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
And then developers as well. Like if we use a new tool, like we started using, I think Browser Stack it's called, for testing IE and mobile and stuff. Yeah. I'm not really like going in and screenshotting exactly what to do at each step. So I'll normally get one of the developers to say, this is the exact steps you have to follow, put that into the solutions doc. And then I'll go in and review it, make sure it's okay. And then I'll notify the team to read it.
Yeah.
Sort of proactively. And then they know when it comes in.
Yeah.
It'll be there. And also there's a process for new starts where the first thing they have to do on the job is read through all this documentation. So they see all of that before they get assigned a ticket.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm finding myself these days, like I still write, you know, lots of procedures for my team, and I've written like pretty long ones, but sometimes I'll give a task to a teammate, you know, because something comes up, like a customer asks, you know, how to do something. And I realize like, we don't have a procedure for it yet. So I'm just going to like, and I'm like super busy all day. So I'll just tell my teammate, look, here's an email. I'm going to like fire off a couple quick steps over an email. And then at the end of that, I'll be like, by the way, just, can you turn this into a procedure?
Yeah.
You know, and like we have a template procedure that they would then use. They have a procedure for creating procedures. You know, so they can go and
like that,
and like, you know, kind of use the template and just convert the crap that I just sent them over a quick Gmail and turn it into a good looking procedure that we can improve later.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds pretty similar. Except we sort of don't have that many procedures. We've got quite a few procedures for the admin guys, but for the developers, we really just have that one document, and the canned responses and that sort of, other than that, we just kind of communicate via live chat and, make sure everyone kind of understands things, but we don't have like a whole bunch of different procedures for things.
Very nice.
So we're still using Google Docs too. So that's sort of part of it is, I don't want like 50 different docs for devs to have to worry about.
Yeah, we actually do use Google Docs as well, and we do have like 50 different docs. The way that we've handled that is I have one spreadsheet, so we have like a procedures folder in Google Drive and one like master spreadsheet in that, and that spreadsheet lists out all the different procedures, like the title and then the link to that Google Doc.
Yeah.
And then we kind of separate the spreadsheet into a couple of tabs. Like we'll have like support procedures, admin procedures, sales and marketing procedures, a couple other ones.
Yeah, I love Google Drive. I think it works really well. We use it for everything.
Very nice. Okay, so let's, you know, a couple more minutes here. Let's just talk kind of briefly about marketing. I know in the very beginning you talked about how, you know, you launched the landing page real quickly. So how did you get those very first customers?
Well, I had a bit of momentum. Well, I wouldn't say momentum, but I had a bit of an audience because I built a list up with Informally.
Right.
And I'd also been active in a forum, an entrepreneurs forum, and I'd sort of been discussing what I'd been doing in there. So I posted it in the forum and then I emailed my list, and that's really all I did. We haven't really done anything marketing-wise since then. We turned on AdRoll recently, and we've got like a pretty low spend with that, but that's really the only thing we've done. Other than creating a lot of content and deliberately trying to build the brand and get press, we haven't really done any sort of paid marketing.
So everything up to this point, 500 customers, is all of your content marketing efforts.
It's, to be honest, it's mostly brand and word of mouth. It's like, right. I could claim that it's content, but the content is, to me, is, I see it as being part of just brand building, because the way people think content works is you put out a blog post about WordPress and people see it and then sign up for your service, but that's not really how it works.
Right.
We try to be in as many places as possible and get our brand out there and get our message out there, and the content is part of that. we build the email list and we work on people over time and we try to get press and get mentioned everywhere, but it's a longer term kind of thing where people hear about us and then a few months later when they have a problem, they sign up.
So, yeah, I mean, and I totally agree with all of that, you know, how that there is that misconception, because I've spoken to a lot of people about, you know, quote unquote content marketing, whatever, that like, you know, if I just write these blog posts, then that, how is that going to result in customers? But yeah, it's more about building that audience who kind of returns over time. And even if it's, you know, you're just sharing stuff that's not necessarily directly related to your product or your service, it's just something of interest to your audience. Like you write a lot about building a business, build, you know, entrepreneurship, and your customers are business owners with websites. And, you know, you're not necessarily writing about WordPress. You're writing about business. That's what's interesting.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. And the probably the more important part of that is the people who are influencing our customers are business owners and entrepreneurs. And they're the people that I want our content to appeal to, because it's the people talking about us that are going to send us the leads.
Right. So, I mean, kind of what happens behind the scenes though, when it comes to sales and marketing, right? So, you know, you're getting a lot of traffic organically, lots of referrals and whatnot. What are you doing with email marketing? For example, somebody joins your list. Is it, how do you actually kind of take them down that path through the funnel into WP Curve?
It's, to be honest, it's not really all that scientific. I mean, we don't like directly funnel people into the WP Curve funnel in a way that you would see that kind of internet marketers talk about. What we do is, well, we do a couple of things. We do use Infusionsoft, so we do like a basic level of automation where we kind of know what sort of business people have and what kind of service might appeal to them. Once they become a customer, we have a bunch of automation that kind of works to retain them and get them referring more. Before they become a customer, we just focus on giving them value, and I do a manual email every week to my whole list, and that's probably the most emails people get are probably just that weekly email that I send. We have email courses on different topics. We have one like pitch sequence where like if someone signs up for the first time, then we'll just send them one email saying what WP Curve is and what it's about, and we only send that once. And if they sign up again down the track or sign up to something else, then they won't get that again. And we also just have a whole bunch of stuff around like different ideas for improving WordPress and different business ideas that if people stay on the emails, eventually like they're going to start thinking of ideas that they need fixed, and then we'll be a top of mind for being the company that fixes them.
Right, right. Interesting. And so, I mean, what about customers who come to the site and they ask you a bunch of questions, they're interested in signing up, but they haven't taken that step yet. Do you do any, obviously you answer their questions, but are there anything else, like you'll go and follow up with someone, or do you have any systems for that?
Just retargeting. I mean, the two ways of getting people who hit the site and don't buy straight away are email opt-in and retargeting. So if they come to the site and they chat to us, I mean, if they sign up for the emails, they'll be on our list and they'll continue to get our emails. Or if they don't, then they'll leave and they'll see the retargeting ads. I mean, I don't know really what else we could do. I suppose we could put them on we could ask everybody if they wanted to be on an email list and, you know, send them some ideas. Like we've got a sequence where we have like 52 different WordPress improvement suggestions, and we send that to current customers to give them ideas for requesting jobs. So at some stage, we'll probably use that as a way to like get people on early. We've got a few bigger ideas about what we might do with that too. But for now, I mean, it's kind of funny. It's our biggest problem is not getting new leads. So
yeah,
the part of the business that we spend the most amount of time on is not like getting the perfect funnel. It's making sure we do a good job, making sure we hire enough people, making sure we're the developer, the owners of the company and the staff are happy. That kind of stuff is a much bigger focus for us than generating new leads.
Yeah. Well, that is a great place to be. I guess I have one final question for you here. And so what do you spend most of your time on these days?
I'd like to say creating content, but I'd probably be lying. For the first 6 months, it was probably creating content, but the last few months, it's gotten so busy that I spend most of my time managing the team and managing the kind of the jobs and allocating them, and also my personal email, that kind of stuff. But we've always sort of had the vision where at some stage, Alex will find someone to do the client management on and the team management on his side, And at some stage, I'll find someone to do it on my side. And we're getting pretty close to, like, Alex has already got Julie doing that. And I'm getting pretty close to that point too. So once I get to that point, I'll do a lot more of the stuff I like doing. I've locked in like a bunch of conferences I'm going to present at. I've also written a book. So doing a lot more of that content, spreading the message, is kind of the and meeting with entrepreneurs. I'm in a co-working space. So that kind of stuff is good. That's stuff I like doing. I'd like to do more of.
Very nice. Well, Dan, thank you so much for taking the time. You know, this has been, you know, really, really helpful.
Cool, man. Well, I hope it has been helpful. If anyone's got any questions, then and my email is dan@wpcurve.com. Feel free to shoot me an email. I've written a couple of posts around like service as a service ideas as well and business ideas, which maybe might be interesting to people who are looking at starting a services business. So I can send you a link to those.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'm going to include all these links in there for sure. So Dan at WP Curve. And by the way, your book, it's called 7 Day Startup.
Yeah. It's taken so long to edit, I think, because I'm not a very good writer. Like, I'm pretty messy. And so the editor's just taken ages to edit it. I think it's taken like 4 or 5 months, but I think it's formatted and ready now. And I'm just working with someone on making sure that it's going to be free. But I still want to do like a basic level of marketing to the point where people actually know about it. So,
very nice.
At the moment, I've got an opt-in on wpcurve.com/7-day-startup. But once it launches, hopefully in a couple of weeks, maybe like really early October or hopefully late September, then it'll be available to everyone. So, cool. Yeah, I hope it's useful. It's really just a book about encouraging people to start, get to the point where you've got a product and customers as quickly as possible, and then make decisions about your business after that point, as opposed to making assumptions before that point. And that's sort of part my story, part blueprint for doing that for your own business.
Very nice. Well, Dan, thanks again. And, congrats on your success. It's been really exciting to watch you over the past year. Can't wait to see where you guys go next.
Thanks, man. It's been great to be on again.
Okay,
talk to you soon.
Thanks for tuning in today. Get all the show notes for this entire season at productizepodcast.com. And to get my free Productize Crash Course, where I share my best strategies for launching and sustaining your Productize service business, head over to productizecourse.com. All right, time to get back to working on the business.